Blog Talk Radio.
923, I'll give you a correct address, but you have a fire in a one-story ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control, squad 5. And go to 273-273. And go to the tiny teeny 18 battalion. Go to 273-273.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Politics and Tactics. My name is Nick Papa. Our host, Frank Ritchie, will not be joining us tonight, but myself and Dave Polykoff will be leading tonight's show. We have two excellent guests lined up for you all. First, we have Brian Butler, a captain from the Trenton, New Jersey Fire Department, and Lee Shapiro, a recently retired deputy chief from the Hartford, Connecticut Fire Department. So, Brian, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me. My name is Brian Butler. I'm a captain with the city of Trenton. I've been there 22 years. Currently signed to Engine 10 downtown. I'm in my 16th year as on an engine company. I did about 7 on a truck. And during my career, pretty much I've been assigned to almost every house in the city, every piece of apparatus.
All right, great. No, thanks
also
for joining us today, Brian.
Training. Thanks, sir.
Awesome. All right, Lee, why don't you go ahead and just take a second and introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Lee Shapiro. Thank you for having me, by the way. I did 28 years at Hartford Fire Department, Hartford, Connecticut, and I retired as a senior tour commander in District 1. And I worked myself up through the ranks and retired as a deputy chief.
All right. So the focus of tonight's show is going to be on basement and attic fires. This is a class that Brian has a topic that Brian has developed for one of the classes he teaches around the country. So, Brian, why don't you talk about just momentarily and just give everyone a brief rundown of what prompted you to pick that topic as one of your classes, and what's the main message you try to get across with your basement and attic fire class?
Kind of like with all my classes, I kind of do what I do at work, what I'm assigned to, what's in my district. I'm also a member of King of Prussia out in suburban Philadelphia in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, where I kind of have a district out there that covers a certain amount of areas that are different than my urban career department. So what I try to focus on is what I have, what I do, which is fires in a lot of row homes, wood frame houses, taxpayers. I also have like a rail, Northeast Corridor, rail line and light rail that goes to my district. So I try to focus on them. The reason I did basements and attics is because I feel like top floor and bottom floor fires, you know, they need special attention. And, you know, these unique tactics, they're the ones that are pretty, to me, dangerous. Their basement fires kill more firemen than any other area of the building. And there's, you know, basement fires aren't a one-size-fits-all. There's so many different types of basements and cellars, so many types of different attics, living space attics, storage attics, and then cock lofts. And if guys aren't familiar with them, you know, they get off the truck and they're just pulling line thinking they just got an average basement fire, an average attic fire. And what I did is I try to teach them that you can tell a lot from the street what kind of basement that is before you even get out of the truck. You can tell what kind of attic that is before you even get out of the truck, so you know where you're going with your line and where you're going to the roof to do truck work. So that's what I like to do. I have a unique style of teaching. And it's also common jobs for the city of Trenton.
Absolutely. So Trenton sees its fair share of work, and you guys see a very consistent volume of fire. So in your experiences, let's start from the bottom up and begin with basement fires. In your experiences, what are some of the lessons that you've learned that really stuck out in your mind that you try to translate through your class when it comes to basement fires?
Well, that's an awesome question, because in 2004, 2005 was probably I had the luxury of working in East Trenton, which was a pretty busy company for fires, not so much alarms or runs, and you know, it was a mostly residential district. And I got a chance to get a few good basement fires, and it was the first time I fell through a floor. And I missed a lot of things because I was a nozzleman, and we pulled up. I'll just give you an example for a fire and a vacant. I call it the occupied vacant. That's what I call all my vacants that have people inside of them, because, you know, the building's vacant. The structure itself is a vacant building. Just because someone broke in and stole the house and lives there, it doesn't change the title of the building, you know, is defined as a vacant. It's 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. It was single digits out, and we pulled up to a house with heavy fire, and you could hear people screaming behind the board up. So we knew we had vagrants trapped. And you're so focused on getting to them that, you know, I missed an X on the building, which was a dangerous, hazardous building. We stretched the line to the interior stairs. We try to make the stairs so we can go up and protect the stairwell and try to get these guys out. And little do we know, we had fire on the first and second floor, but we also had a fully involved basement that we didn't know about until we got halfway across the threshold, and I fell through the floor. But luckily, I landed on a joist. But I realized how close I came. Now, I wasn't an officer. I had about 7 years on the job. But, you know, that was close. That could have went another way, a totally another way. So, we had to back out of the building because the floor was compromised, and we lost a few guys upstairs that were vagrants that took over the house. And from that moment on, I just really started getting into, like, basement fires and vacants.
So, Brian, in hindsight, with some experience behind you and now having about double the amount of time on the job since that incident, looking back now, what were some other than, you know, the X on the outside that you told us about just now? What were some of the other red flags or some of the signs that you recall now in hindsight that would have kind of tipped you off to, or some of the things that you would have done that would have tipped you off that there was a well-involved basement fire when you first arrived?
Well, I mean, to this day, I always check the basement. I don't care if it's a second-floor fire, and it's not just in balloon frame. I do it to almost every house I go to. If I had the chance to take a peek, usually you have front cellar windows. You can't always do a 360 in the city all the time. So I try to check the basement, or I'll assign the chief, hey, have somebody check the basement, get back to me, let me know what's up. Also, for that fire, we were second due, but we winded up being first due. So things changed. Instead of looking for a hydrant and backing down, we're at the front door, tank water, or we're doing fire attack. And, you know, it's just like it was cold, so the cold smoke, just, you know, it was hanging low. It's covering that big fluorescent X with faded paint on it, which means hazardous building. The things like that, because you're so focused on upstairs, you hear people screaming. They're pounding on these HUD windows trying to get out. And you're like, hey, we got to get up there. And it just kind of, you know, you weren't really doing the thorough size up, the young, experienced guy we should have been doing. I mean, I was the nozzle, and I was in front. Also, we had a fire in Trenton. We almost lost 3 guys in a fire in Trenton. I wasn't working. I was on the shift after. And they were rescued by a crew through a basement window. Their line had burned through the first floor flash. They got trapped in the basement, and they had to do reduced profile through a cellar window. Those guys' lives were saved by a good company that got them out. So, you know, when you start – you know, I wasn't there, but at the same time, knowing those guys and what they went through and seeing the looks on their faces and the stories they told about that incident, you know, it makes you think, don't think it can't happen to you. You got to prepare better. Now, it's not 100%. You're going to be the best fireman, really good fireman, die in basement fires. And it could be a guy who's not the greatest fireman. He might go 25 years and have no problems. So, you know, it gets the best of us. So what I do is try to just know as much as I can to reduce my risk of that ever happening.
Absolutely. So, Lee, I'm going to kick it to you just to expound upon that, especially from a ship commander's viewpoint, and what were some of the things that you looked for coming up through the ranks and, you know, having served on busy companies as a company officer and then as a ship commander. What were some of the things that you looked for when you were trying to either confirm or rule out a basement fire when you first arrived?
Well, let me first frame this whole conversation by saying that old construction is designed to burn, and new construction is designed to collapse. So as long as you keep that in mind, you pretty much know what you're dealing with. So when you roll up to an old building, you got to send the company to the basement, usually with a line. There's really no choice because you don't know what's going on. The problem with the basement is there's only one way in, one way out usually. You can't come out the windows, which that would keep me up at night, getting stuck in the basement. You can't get out the windows because they're small, usually small. There's usually either a gas or an oil tank down there, a gas feed, so you have a fuel situation. There's usually all kinds of stuff piled up everywhere, so you can't maneuver. You have electrical wires and piping and this and that hanging down, getting caught in your gear and in the tank. The basement is probably the worst place to have the fire, and it's a tough spot to be in. And rule of thumb for us was 2.5 right down the stairwell and knock it out as fast and as thoroughly as we possibly can. But as far as pulling up, even if smoke is pushing out the eaves or the third floor window, that could be a basement fire. So you really got to send somebody down there with a line to confirm whether it's a fire or it's clear. And stay down because it will travel. You can have an attic fire, and the next thing you know, it's in the basement. It's in the walls. Three wood, three brick, old construction, you'll have a fire throughout within a half an hour. So, but the basement fire is a tough spot.
Dave, I'm going to kick the same question over to you and your experience as a ship or as a battalion chief, as an incident commander. What are some of the concerns that, you, that you're taking taking in when you first arrive?
We actually built a policy, one of our structural firefighting policy. We actually specifically mentioned basement fires in my county and the what you need, the things that you need to do, things that need to be said on the radio. The first and foremost is if you can get to 360, you got to get to 360. If not, somebody has to get a report from the rear. If the first due company officer can't get 360 done, then our third due engine company is in the rear or second due truck. Given that rear size up report, we're looking for, you know, obviously any trap victims, any smoke or fire. We're also looking to find out if there's an exterior basement entrance. County I'm in, we have a mixture. We go from urban to suburban to rural in my county. And so we have a mixture of all kinds of new construction and legacy construction. But, you know, as an incident commander, when I'm rolling up on the scene, you know, I'm making sure that all those parts that haven't been said over the radio are mentioned. We need to send somebody to the basement. Like the chief said earlier, is the basement has to be covered. Somebody has to check the lowest level to make sure that we're not operating over top of a structure that's burning underneath our feet. Secondly, we need to, if we have a rear basement entrance, we need to start coordinating that attack. If there is no basement entrance, and they have to make the push down the stairs, you know, it has to be communicated over the radio so crews or outside crews are ready to vent any windows that need to be vented while they're making a push. But like the chief said, the basement fire, you never know what you're going to get. There can be anything in there. And it doesn't matter if it's a new or an old residence. People just pile everything in their basement, things that they don't want to see anymore. And you could end up in a hoarding condition while you're trying to make your way down the basement stairs. Some of the things, one of the basement fires I ran probably about 5 or 6 months ago when I rolled up on the scene, cruiser had fire from the eaves of a Cape Cod, or not fire, but smoke from the eaves from a Cape Cod on the second floor. And when I pulled up right away, I noticed the smoke coming from the chimney. And the development that we were in, I know that these houses don't have fireplaces. They have oil burners. So I knew right away. I got on the radio immediately and said, guys, you got a fire in the basement. You got to get into the basement. And I ended up getting the third due engine company in there. It's from a lightning strike. Hit the electrical panel and lit the basement on fire. But little telltale signs like that, knowing your first due area and keying in on things. And, you know, if you have smoke coming out of the chimney during a summer day and you know that these places don't have fireplaces, and if it's oil or gas, you need to get somebody in the basement right away. Just little things like that you pick up throughout your career.
Absolutely. Lee, you got something? Ignoring a basement fire is the same thing as having guys on the roof and ignoring fire underneath. Because eventually it'll burn through and it'll fall. So you really got to, you know, that's one of the things you got to put on your list when you roll up. Get a crew to the basement for the line. And if there's nothing to do, well, then you're ahead of it. But there is fire. You're also ahead of it because now you slowed it down to the point where you guys can operate on the other things. They're not standing on that point.
Absolutely. And getting that, getting eyes around the rear and doing that 360 or 270, depending on conditions. I know Brian alluded to it earlier, but in the urban environment, getting a complete 360 isn't always possible. So at least getting that three-sided view and checking out as much real estate as you possibly can is huge, because at least you can get eyes on some of the basement windows to shine a light if it's at night time, to peek in and see what you have for conditions in the basement, at the very least for the first arriving company, regardless of what you have for conditions showing. So that's imperative, because we had an incident about a year and a half ago. We were the second arriving engine company. We arrived just behind the first two, rolled up to what we call, what Lee and I call a three brick, which for anybody who's not from New England, that's it's a three-story ordinary with two railroad-style slabs per floor, with the center staircase and usually open rear wooden porches.
Absolutely.
So they rolled up, and it was just one of those nights where there's a lot of moisture in the air. The smoke was banked down really low in the street, and the smoke was just seeping out of the roof line. So the first two engine company arrived on scene, gave a smoke showing. They got off the truck, and this was a building that was a frequent flyer for alarms and is heavily occupied. But what the officer didn't know was the day before, that building had gotten dumped for violations and was not occupied. So when we rolled up at 1:30 in the morning or somewhere around there, and nobody was out in the street, he went right into, that life safety mode and was concerned about the life safety hazard. So there was no 360 done. So because of that, that really set the set things in motion very negatively. So after we established the water supply for them, the ladder company, which is out of my house, had arrived on scene, and their crew had done a 360, and the officer noted that it was that we had a basement fire. So he radioed in, and that really kind of recalibrated the incident, and he gave a very clear and concise transmission over the air that let everybody know that we had a basement fire and got everybody in that frame of mind. So we ended up at the first line down in the basement, and one of the things that lessons I kind of learned the hard way as a newer company officer was, after we had knocked down the most of the fire, lights out in the basement, and the fire condition was not as bad as we had anticipated, because one of the water pipes had actually let loose and was keeping the bulk of the fire in check. And once we had knocked the fire down and we called for ventilation, the smoke started to lift. I noticed that the roof or the floor joists, which were substantial pieces of the lumber, they were either 2x8 or 2x10, and they were significantly charred. And where the bulk of the fire was right by all of the utilities, so that the hot water heaters and the boilers, which, if you know ordinary construction, the way fire vertically extends in those buildings is in the pipe chases. So that should have been, for me, should have hit, thrown up a red flag and instantly prompted a transmission over the radio saying, be advised, the bulk of the fire is by the pipe chases. We need to, open up on every floor above and check for extension. Yeah, so the chief just said it was the wet wall. So unfortunately, that fire had been burning for some time, and because it was held in check for so long by that pipe down to the base, it just gave it so much time for it to run that wet wall all the way up into the cock loft, and we were significantly behind the eight ball, and that was one that got away from us. So can't put enough stress on doing that due diligence and checking on the basement, and also knowing your building construction too, and knowing how fire is going to travel in these buildings, so you can anticipate where the fire is going to go, so you can cut it off.
Can I just type in?
Yeah.
One of the things that I always held in check in my toolbox, so to speak, when I roll up to a fire in a three wood or a three brick, and I commit companies to the basement, I then consider it confined space. There's usually only one way in, one way out. There's very limited space to move around with their line. There's really no way to get out of there in a big hurry, not like they can jump out a window or they can go back through a different door. It's a confined space in the conceptual type of meeting. So you have to treat it as a confined space. That requires additional resources to get them out if need be. That requires additional resources for them to put the fire out if need be, or to do whatever. So it's not like they're operating on a fire floor or a second, third floor. It's a confined space. And you have to manage that accordingly. That was one of the things I always kept in my mind. Once I commit these guys to the basement, they're in confined space. Not the kind of confined space with tripods and stuff like that, but it's still similar.
Absolutely.
But you got to keep that in mind.
So, Brian, what are some of the tactics that Trenton utilizes for combating the basement fires?
Well, it depends because, you know, like I said, not all basements are the same. There's so many, like for garden apartments, there's so many configurations for garden apartments of where their basement is and what type of basement it is. It could be a half-story subdivision apartment. It could be a full-story. It could be on the sides used for storage and utility. It could be a terrace level. You could have basement apartments in multifamilies where the super lives. You could have, a cellar apartment in a brownstone. Row homes usually have the ordinary basements with storage or, you know, with their utilities in there. Some of them are converted into living spaces. You get the estate homes that have these beautiful living space attics that are like entertainment rooms with an English walkout in the back. Then you have the taxpayers with the sidewalk doors. You might have bill code doors. You might have a split level or a colonial with a living space, lightweight truss, I-joists, webs. There's so many different – it depends what you have. Obviously, if I'm in the city, I got an ordinary constructed row home, and I'm a three-minute response time with a full assignment in the career department. There's an easier chance for me making those interior stairs to get down, which I have. Sometimes there's not even high heat conditions where in the basement's going pretty good. You could actually stand up and walk to the door. But if I had a 20-minute response time in the suburbs with lightweight construction, chances are it's going to collapse or it's already collapsed already and it's heavy fire before I even get there. So it would depend on what I have and where I'm at. And if it's two in the front, four in the back, I call the 270 size up. This is what usually I can get at the most is a three-sided view. If I see the foundation getting bigger and longer, I know there's probably a slope in the back. Or if I see a drop, that's something that maybe I want to go a little further back, see if there's a rear entrance. We also have a lot of alley, I call them alley dwellings, which is, it looks like it's in the front, but that's only the first four apartments. The other four apartments are in the back, and you have to access the alley or go down an alleyway from the front to access them. So that's what I'm saying. It's like there's not really just one way to do basement fires. It's crazy to how many different types of basements there are and how many different ways to get to them. So, and that's what I'm big for. Like when I, on my, that's why I love Instagram and Facebook and social media is I like taking pictures and showing guys this stuff that you might think it's the front door with four mailboxes. Go around back where you'd never think four apartments are, and there's four more with four mailboxes, 4 meters, and that's how you get in that apartment. And we're very aggressive in Trenton. I mean, we're real aggressive. That's what I love about the city. We use tank water to the front door. We're aggressive. We try to get water on the fire quick.
Yeah, that's the same thing in Hartford, tank water.
Hey, so Dave, I'm gonna kick it to you next. So in Montgomery County, what is the typical approach to your bread and butter basement fire?
With our incident response policy, we had recognized that we were kind of missing the big picture when it came to these basement fires. A lot of guys were going right through the front door. And then going to try to attack the basement fire going down the steps without actually getting that 360 in. So there's a few things that have to happen when the officer gets on the scene. You know, we have our initial on-scene report, and then we have a supplemental unit report once they actually dismount the apparatus. And, again, we had talked about the 360. You know, if you're talking a single family, something that's larger like a middle-of-the-road townhouse or something like that, you know, we've told our guys, you know, If the townhouse is on fire, force entry into the townhouse next door. Walk through and take a look out the rear to see what's going on at the bottom if you can't get that full 360 view. We're hitting this with tank water. Our whole incident response policy when we redid this a year and a half ago was all around fast water, getting water on the fire the fastest way possible. So with that, the basement fire policy came into effect where if you've got a rear entrance, if you can get the rear entrance open, you can get the line right to the basement fire. You knock the fire. Second due company's got a line. They're protecting the search, protecting the door to the basement, make sure it's closed. If there's no door there, at least making sure that the fire's not, you know, coming up the stairs so the crews that are operating on the first and second floors can go ahead and maintain a search. With that, we ended up redoing all of this fast water kind of all came into play where we started to we're buying new apparatus, and with the new apparatus, the fire chief said there was a chance that we could take a look at our hose line complement, and ultimately staying true with the fast water concept, we dumped our inch and three-quarter line and we went back to inch and a half, and still getting 150 gallons a minute out of our inch and a half, but we shaved off 12 pounds per 100-foot section, so these guys are pulling these lines in a lot quicker. with the four-person engine crew. And that's allowed us to get our lines in to where it needs to be. It's very crucial when you're dealing with newer construction where these places are built to burn. And we usually we pride ourselves on no more than an eight-minute response time from the time the alarm comes in to the time the first piece of apparatus gets on the door or gets to the scene. Most of the time we're looking anywhere like down county within 2 to 3 minutes to when you get up into the rural areas, a possible eight-minute response. But we've approached the whole concept of attacking the fire, be it a basement fire or being it on the main level or upper level, with getting water as fast as possible, the quickest route possible.
So, Dave, you kind of foreshadowed where my next question was going to go, and this is kind of a contentious one with tactics. So in regards to basement fire, I'm going to kick this around to the group. But so there's a big divergence as far as tactics goes, and there's one mindset that you should always go enter through the basement through the interior staircase, so that way you're protecting that first floor and you're protecting that staircase. And then there's the other school of thought that it should be an action of opportunity, that if you do have that that immediate access, whether it be a Bilco door, a grade level door, or just a door that accesses down a flight of stairs that enters directly into the basement, that you enter in. And which I'll give my opinion first. And as far as I go, I really do believe in that path of least resistance. So if there is a point of access that is either ground level or through a Bilco door or a door that descends another flight of stairs directly into the basement, that's going to be my go-to, with the caveat being that the interior basement door is controlled to the first floor. That if the fire is starting to burn through, or that door is not controlled, then that's a game changer, because now if you have crews that are entering in on that floor, now they're unprotected. So that does change the dynamic a bit. So that's, for me, that's kind of the linchpin of which way I'm going to go, is whether or not that door is controlled. But for me, if I can access from the outside directly in, now I have immediate access. I'm not putting my crews through that punishing chimney effect of going down the interior staircase. And then also, if that door is controlled and intact, the first floor is essentially isolated from the basement fire. So if I do go through that front door and try to go through that and open that door to go down the interior staircase, now I'm essentially contaminating that whole first floor and now drawing the fire up to that location. So now you're dumping everything into the first floor, making the conditions worse up there, and now having to fight your way down through where the fire's trying to vent out from. So, Brian, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that, like I said, that would depend. Say it's 3 in the morning, you got people trapped. I want to let the guys go upstairs. Say the truck company or the rescue guys are going up to do a search, and that fire's coming up the stairs. First of all, I'm going to open that line at the top of the stairs while controlling the door, put that line in there, try to wet the stairs because I might have to use them later. I don't want them getting burned away. And I'm going to try to keep the fire in its cage so those guys are done with their searches, everybody's out of the house, and then determine from there whether I'm going to make the stairs or not to put that fire out. There's not really a lot of secondary egresses in our city as far as our basements and row homes. There's not too many Bilco doors. It's usually the cellar windows that are usually on the front sidewalk. So that would be our way out. That's why I'm for a proactive RIG team. If I'm ever acting chief and we have a basement fire, the RIG team has to have a ladder at the door instead of waiting for it to be needed in case the floor falls through and the guys fall in the basement. The backup line's got to be ready to go and charged, of course. Maybe that line could be used to protect the fire from coming out. If the guys can make the push downstairs, put the fire out, everything gets better. But, what's the objective of the hose line when you first arrive at the basement fire? Is it really going to be to protect that first floor from the fire coming up from the basement until those people get out? Now, if everybody's accounted for, can I go down and just put the fire out? So all those factors will be factored into my decision-making and what I do.
Absolutely. Lee, what are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, we had a rule of thumb in Hartford for a 3-wood or 3-brick that the basement line was the only line allowed in the rear of the building, because that's where the access to the basement was in the rear. So that was the only line allowed to enter from the rear of the building. All the other lines were through the front door. That was just the basic rule of thumb, through the front door, no matter what you had going on. because otherwise we end up with opposing hand lines. We end up with, you know, too many chefs in the kitchen, so to speak. And nobody's really paying attention to controlling the doors, you know, to whatever's going on where it's needed. There's too much going on. So just to simplify it, all the lines went through the front door except the one going to the basement, or the two going to the basement. And we just, you know, changed the plan accordingly based on what we had in the basement. That was basically what we done. Yes.
And I think at the end of the day,
on what he just said,
yes.
That's good what he said about opposing streams. And what's also common is most of the row houses were in the cities. A lot of their kitchens are in the back. That would be the back porch, and you come in through the kitchen. A lot of times when you go through a basement interior door entrance, that door will actually come towards you, which is a real pain in the ass. I learned that on my second basement fire where you had the line charged already, and getting that door open towards us was such a pain because we couldn't fit through. And now I always know to go into that kitchen and loop that line around dry and then charge the line and then go in where the door opens the proper way. Find out which way that door opens. Also, my line might be in there, looped around the kitchen to get ready to deploy from there to go down the stairs. So to have another line, another hose line coming from the back, that'd be another problem. Not to mention stretching to the back. And like you said, he has different buildings there. That might be a good move for that particular building.
I'm glad you brought that good point up about the pre-staging and the line in relation to the swing of the door. I think that I know for me that whenever I listen to these podcasts or when I sit in on a class, those are some of those little pearls of wisdom that are only learned through experience that I'm trying to glean whenever I'm trying to when I'm listening to somebody speak. So I appreciate that. And
where's the heaviest part of the basement? Where's the heaviest floor in regards to a basement fire that's attacking the joists? The heaviest part's probably going to be on the kitchen side where the refrigerator and all the appliances are. I'd rather be on the living room side anyway.
Yeah, that's another thing. Not only is it a confined space, but there's also a collapse problem. As it burns away, it's going to come down on top of it.
Absolutely.
It's where all your weight's at.
And I think one of the important lessons to really pick out of all of this conversation is that, you know, so much of firefighting is regional because of the built environment that we all work in and how vastly different it can be and how important it is to not only know your district but understand building construction and, you know, knowing how these buildings are built, where the void spaces are, how the fire is going to travel, where their weaknesses are, and, you know, how vulnerable they are to collapse, because that's going to give you so much of an advantage when you go to implement your tactics and picking your means of access and where you're going to position to cut the fire off if it is traveling in the void. And that is so critical and plays a huge part into everybody's role from all the way up from the nozzle firefighter all the way up to the incident commander. You know, knowing that building construction is critical to being successful on the fire ground.
To surviving, too. You really have to know building construction. There's no way around it. You have to understand it and appreciate it because that's what you're dealing with. And it doesn't matter if it's an old building or a new building. You have to understand how a high-rise is put together. And then you have to understand how garden apartments, even modern apartments, are put together, what materials they're using, how they're making these things, how they're making their holes through walls. Because that's where you're going to find a problem.
And it's so important to keep your finger on the pulse in your district and your city. And just the other day, we were coming back from a run, and a building it was a three-wood or three-decker that we had in our district. It was a fire that I had probably about 6 years ago or so, and it was a good fire. A substantial damage was done to the building, and they're just now finally getting around to renovating it. And one of the things that stuck out to me was they're using OSB for the roof decking when they're repairing this place. So when this building is finished being renovated and gets all buttoned up, God forbid there's another fire in there, when you roll up, and I know for us, when we see a three-decker, we're used to substantial construction, true dimensional lumber, rough cut, you know, if it hasn't been renovated or the roof hasn't been replaced, usually it's tongue and groove or maybe plywood on top of tongue and groove. so we're used to that substantial lumber. And now you have an attic fire, a top floor fire with extension, and now you have OSB underneath your feet. That's a total game changer. You know, the rate that stuff off gases, how weak it gets under combustion, it will definitely catch you off guard if you're not anticipating it. But, you know, making sure that you're paying attention to what's going on in your neighborhood as far as new construction, renovations, additions, that sort of thing, you can really stay ahead of things. You know, right across the street from that same building, there was a small church that was being renovated. And instead of replacing the existing flat roof, they built a truss construction rain roof over the top of the existing roof. So, again, you pull up to this old building thinking it's ordinary, you know, single-story ordinary construction, and it's completely different. You know, you go and pop that top in the roof for vertical ventilation, nothing comes out because you're standing on top of a rain roof. That's truss construction. So this is it. It's so important to pre-plan and pay attention to what's going on in your district, so you don't get caught off guard when you think you're rolling up to this legacy construction building, and lo and behold, it's been renovated with lightweight materials.
Hey Nick,
fire code.
Yeah.
Hey, that was good that you brought that up. Is renovated buildings. Last summer we had a basement fire in a renovated basement that had plywood underneath the joists instead of, gypsum board. It had just straight up plywood underneath, but it also had plywood on top, plywood partitions. There was five or six rooms converted in the basement. So you had fire in the basement. The water was just bouncing off the plywood. You couldn't reach any part of the rooms from the top of the stairs, which were starting to burn away. The fire eventually got into the walls, ran up, and took out three houses. And then it was the first time in 20 years I was on a fire. We actually had to cut a hole in the floor to put the fire out in the basement. And when we cut through the floor, we had to go through half-inch plywood, through the joists, half-inch plywood.
That's unreal.
To get to the fire and the front cellar window.
And one of the other things that we got to be concerned about too, especially when it comes to basement fires, especially with new construction or renovated construction, is this press board and this OSB. They're starting to use that same building construction processes for staircases as well. And it's this junky press board stringers and staircases.
The finger joints with glue, nails, no more gusset plates, no more nails, just finger joints and glue, like you're making arts and crafts. That's what they're building houses on. Like
cardboard construction.
That's next. Don't get it wet. Don't get it wet.
That's what I call cardboard construction. These engineered eye stairs are coming up with. It's just at least if that fails, you know the floor's probably going.
You know, when you pull up to these buildings and you think, okay, you know, fire code, it's up to code, fire code this, fire code that. Fire code only means bare bones minimum. And usually there's a modification to that because somebody can't afford to put in a sprinkler system or put in an alarm system. So fire code, you just kind of put that aside and realize that these things are designed to burn and collapse. And the same thing with high-rises. There's so many different modifications depending on who's paying for that high-rise. And I can go into that different research show. But just because you have an alarm system and a smoke reversal system and all this stuff, it doesn't mean that things are going to go perfect in a high-rise. It just means that bare bones minimum per code, that's what you have.
And one of the things to keep in mind, too, going along those same code lines, is that the reason why most of these building materials pass their way through is because they're strong under normal conditions. You know, they may be strong under a load, and you know these lightweight constructions, they may be able to span large spaces without intermediate support. But the problem is those are under normal conditions. But once we start adding water into the mix, you start adding
it with fire,
right, and you compromise it with fire, start putting it under heat and combustion. Now that's a total game changer. And Lee brought up a great point with the finger jointing and the glue. And you talk about this OSB and press board, which is, you know, held together with adhesives, and all of this stuff off gases and burns. And, you know, the weakest link of any structure is the connection points. And if we don't have substantial connection points, or those connections actually contribute to the fuel load in the combustion process, it's only making matters worse for us.
then you throw in the usual insults of an oversized live load, an oversized dead load. We're going to add an air conditioning unit. It's okay. It fits. We nailed it down. It works. You know, not realizing that the building's not made, it's not designed to hold the stuff. And then you add all these modifications that people do on their own, or a construction company comes in and does something. Don't worry about it. And now you have a real problem when you pull up and the thing's on fire.
So, Brian, what are some of the things that you encounter in Trend that are unique as far as hindrances that are going to hamper your extinguishment efforts or your operations when it comes to basements?
We have a lot of vacants, especially in my district. We got almost, I guess, close to 1,000 vacants per square mile, vacant properties in the city. And usually when there's a fire and a property's burned out, it just sits there. They don't really gut it and renovate it and then, you know, re-rent the thing out. It usually just sits there. So sometimes if I'm in a certain neighborhood where I know some of the houses through gentrification, certain neighborhoods have been rehabbed, so you might see an ordinary constructed house there. If there's ever a fire in that house, I won't assume that it's got the good 2x8s and the half-inch plywood decking. I would assume that it's been redone with lightweight construction. We also have just one complex with lightweight construction and a few townhomes, but most of our city is ordinary and wood frame. It's an old city, and it's a small city, so we really don't have a lot of that. So we have about a third of our jobs are vacant houses. If you want to go into a vacant house and into a basement fire, you just better be real careful.
One last thing I want to touch on quick. Lee and I work in very similar, built environments as far as where we do our bread and butter fires, and these three woods and the three bricks. One of the things that we have that's very common in these there are multiple dwellings, especially in the three bricks where you have, you know, six unit apartment buildings, is that I call them the catacomb storage units down in the basement, where you'll have these plywood pens that are used for they're basically creating storage stalls for each one of the six units, and they are loaded to the gills with anything and everything, and they're usually padlocked up, and they really make the basement a labyrinth. And you want to talk about confined space and heavy fuel load. I mean, you can have all kinds of stuff. I mean, we've gone into basements where we've had dozens upon dozens of, you know, quads and mopeds and scooters and
dance propane tank.
You name it, it's there. So, we touched on how in Hartford their default is the 2.5 for basement fires, and yeah, that's something you definitely want, whether that's your SOP or not. It's definitely something you want to keep in your immediate wheelhouse, because just like a garage fire, you don't know what you're going to wind up with in the basement. It could be a dirt floor basement with just the utilities, or it could be, you know, chock full of basically a hardware store down in the basement for, you know, six units worth of
illegal. What are illegal boarding homes or single room occupancy basements? Which is, I'm sure they see a lot of them in Hartford, D.C. We got them in Trenton, where they take the basements that used to be utility basements, and there's mattresses down there. There's partitions made, and they're renting them out. And there's six, sometimes up to six mattresses down there. We've been to basements, like you said, with lawnmowers and stuff down there, gas for landscaping company businesses. It's crazy the stuff you see in a basement. So you do have a life hazard in a lot of the basements, where normally out in the suburbs and rural areas, you wouldn't have that life hazard.
And that's why, as Lee touched on earlier, it's so important to get somebody down the basement. You know, at the very least, you know, you should be doing that anyways for utilities control. But just to get somebody down there to recon for, you know, just checking for fire extension, and then also, you know, knowing your district and knowing what you have for life hazard, that, you know, you could have that vagrant that is camped out in the basement with that rogue mattress set up down there. And yeah, you want to make sure that you do your due diligence, and your primary search includes the basement as well.
Yeah, and if the fire compromises the wet wall and the pipe chases, it'll eventually reach the basement. It'll be down there waiting for it, as opposed to looking for it.
Absolutely. Hey, Dave, any final thoughts on basement fires before we move on to the attic?
No. Again, I think we all touched on the obvious is that you have to check the basement, even if you're dispatched for you know, fire on the first or second floor, you have to rule out the basement because, you know, there have been times where each of us here on the show have responded thinking the fire's in one place and it's actually in someplace else. So you have to rule the basement out, and communication is the key. Communicating back to the incident commander of how you're going to attack this fire so we can make sure we get the right players in the right place. But all in all, a good discussion, and let's move on to attics, which is just a basement that's upstairs.
So, Brian, why don't you lead off the conversation, and you can take this wherever you want to go, but what do you think? We only have about, you know, 15 minutes or so left to keep this within, you know, Frank's one-hour rule, but if we go over, it's not the end of the week. So just what are some of the lessons or some of the points that you really want to hammer home when it comes to attic fires?
Attic fires, to me, you know, you have to realize, depending on where you work or depending on what kind of house you have, whether it's a rancher or a 2.5-story frame with interior stairs, you might be fighting it from below. You might have an interior stairs that just leads you right up there. It might be a living space. And also, you have to consider the fire spread. If you have a second floor fire, and you know the fire spread, the knee walls, getting up to the attic space is usually only one way out, and that's the stairs. So in my area, a lot of kids sleep in the attics, and you'll see me on my Instagram. I take pictures of kids' beds and toys up in the attic. Sometimes there's 15 to a house in some of these places. I'm sure the other guys are used to this. But you go to these places upstairs, and the attics are actually living spaces. So you got to take them seriously, because if there's a fire below, we got to get to that attic. If it's used for storage, if it's used for a living space, some of them don't have floors. You know, some of them are really nice upstairs. So, you know, it depends what kind of attic you have.
You'll find a lot of mechanical stuff up there, air conditioning units, water heater units, air handlers, stuff like that. You'll find a lot of storage. Sometimes there's a lot of wiring up there, you know, sound systems, Wi-Fi systems. You might have some penetrations in the roof or whatever's going on with that. You know, heating systems or satellite dish systems, stuff like that. It's a whole different world up there.
Dave, what do you have in regards to attic fires?
In my area, you know, I grew up for the first 19 years of my life. I grew up in a Cape Cod, lived in the attic or the finished area. So, you know, we had the knee walls, which are we have a ton of those in the Washington metropolitan area, which present their own hazards, especially when you get into a high heat, zero visibility, can't find the fire type situation. That should be screaming that you've got fire in the knee walls and that hopefully you have a charge hose line up there ready before you breach the wall to put the fire out. But working in some of the like the colonials and neo-colonial houses where you have actual fire in an unfinished attic, a lot of times the biggest, the showstopper would be that attic stairs that go up there, the ladder that goes up there, because everybody knows as soon as you pull that wood frame ladder down, that wooden ladder down, the first step that you take, you smash your foot through it and it's broken. So I make sure that my guys are going in with an attic ladder, and they're going to use that if they have to get up into the actual attic space to put the line up there. In a real world, if the attic floor is not finished, if they haven't put plywood down to put more storage, create more storage space. I want to get my truck crew and my engine crew on that top floor, and have my truck crews work back to back and start pulling the ceilings from the Delta side, or actually from the Echo quadrant all the way to the Delta side, from the Echo quadrant to the Bravo side. Just start pulling the walls and have that hose line up there behind those guys, starting to take care of the fire. I find it, in my experience, is to be able to fight that from below than to try to cram somebody up into a 3x4-foot square hole, putting your head up into where basically it's an oven, to try to get a line up there to whip it around to try to knock the fire down. It's just a lot easier to get that line in from below and start putting that fire out. Unfortunately, you run into the situation where you have plywood floors where they've made more storage space, so you're either going to have to get a saw there to cut that away, or you're going to have to get up into that attic space and put that fire out. So it's not a one-size-fits-all when it comes to fighting attic fires. And, again, you can find anything up there. Storage space, you can find anything up there. If, in my areas, we find gas heaters, water heaters, air conditioning units. So, and then all of those air conditioning lines that are insulation with that wiring that's inside of it. So as soon as that comes unraveled, it's like 5,000 miles of wire, small wire that gets tangled all around you. So lots of hazards that are associated with attics, and you definitely have to have a good engine and truck crew up there working together to try to knock that thing out.
And Nick, if I could jump in.
Absolutely.
It depends whether you're on the if you have a dedicated truck company. Some cities may not, some towns may not. But if you have a truck company or an engine company, I always try to tell the guys, take in all the size of indicators that the building is giving you for free. Like, they're just jumping out at you as soon as you, before you even get out of the truck. Sometimes you can tell what type of attic that is. That'll also depend on your line selection. If you have a rancher with a fire, they get struck by lightning, or there's an attic and a storage fire in a storage space attic where you have to fight it below, and you want to use that steam conversion method of fighting it below, maybe grab your fog nozzle. If it's a 2.5 semi wood frame, it has those small, tight, L-shaped interior stairs. I call them King City houses because you're going to have three doors, three banisters, a whole bunch of turns in there. You're going to have a difficult stretch, but you want to bring them maybe to solid board because you're going to hit a lot of it from the bottom of the stairs, so you're going to need that reach. You're going to have to take out the balusters. You're going to have to – there's certain things that you could just tell right before you even get out of the truck. I know what kind of attic that is. And it's going to be totally different than the attic. Say, when I work in King of Prussia, if I have an attic fire, it's going to be totally different than a 2.5-story frame in parts of the city where I work in.
So, Brian, when it comes to ventilation, what are your tactics for supporting the engine company down below?
In Trenton, we go to the roof for attic fire probably 85% of the time. Coordinated ventilation.
Dave, what about you guys in Montgomery?
In Montgomery County, it's to me, in my personal opinion, it seems like that going to the roof is a dying art. I think that it's a tactic that's viable, and when it's needed, it should happen. In my volunteer house, it's like second nature. We're going to be sending somebody to the roof to get the roof opened up. Obviously, you have to take in all your size-up clues. If you get up there and you actually have fire that's breaking through the roof area, then you don't need to be on the roof because it's going to self-ventilate. But doing a really good size-up.
That's the 15% we don't vent.
hearing what the crews are saying on the inside and, giving you that information, what you're getting on the inside and what you're seeing on the outside. If you can get a truck crew up to the roof, get up to the peak, and then either pull the ridge vent out or sink a saw in there and hit right in the center of the roof, you're probably going to hit the stairwell, punch down, and then get off the roof and maybe buy those guys a couple of minutes to get the line up into place and get that line worked up into the attic. I have no problem going to the roof. I think it's a viable tactic. A lot of people, the newer people that are coming in, they're really not talking about going to the roof. To me, it's a dying art, but I think it's something that should definitely still be in your repertoire of truck company operations, and I don't want to see it go away. I still think it's a very reliable, viable tactic.
Especially when you have row homes where all connected.
Yep.
You want to go to the roof and open all. You don't want that to start spreading horizontally down a common attic or a common cock loft. So we have guys that have to go to the roof. And I'm also a big fan. If you have a chance, especially if you have a new guy, give him another cut behind the knee walls if you have to on his way down.
Absolutely.
Lee, what's Hartford's approach when it comes to ventilation at attic fires or top floor fires?
Well, if you have an active suppression evolution going on, fire in a building like a three wood or three brick, I should hear that blade turning, and that sheathing should be turning into toothpicks because I need that hole immediately. And it's not necessarily let smoke out, so let the heat condition out. Because if the heat is trapped, as we all know recently in Hartford, they rekindled because the heat was trapped, and it just built up and built up and built up, and they came back and had a bigger fire. You got to release the heat. And guys are operating in there. So nobody wants to operate in high heat conditions, high smoke conditions. Open the room. It's a sheet of plywood and a bag of shingles and a handful of nails to fix. Open the roof. It's as simple as that. Open the roof for their own safety and to move the evolution to completion. If you're hesitant, you're going to have a problem. Unless you just don't need it. I mean, if there's no heat condition, there's no smoke, you don't need to start busting up on the roof. If you do, there's no decision to make other than just go and open book.
It's one of the engine guys' favorite sounds to hear is a saw running.
Yeah.
No doubt. The same thing from a standpoint of standing in the street. If I can hear the blade turning, I know something's getting done.
Exactly.
No, Brian, you hit on one of the key points there in this conversation, which was the coordination aspect. And Lee touched on it with his comment as far as there being an engine company underneath, actively engaged in suppression. So that piece is the key there is making sure that the ventilation is properly timed with the fire attack to make sure that heat's being let out, but then also that there's water being applied to combat the combustion process and making sure that the change in the airflow is being a benefit and not hampering the operation. Because if that hole comes too early, just like if we vent a window too early, adding in that extra air is going to allow the fire to grow, and given enough time, whatever opening we just created is eventually going to get overwhelmed by the increase in the heat. So we want to make sure that we don't overwhelm whatever opening we make, and that we make sure that the way we do that is through timing and coordination, and making sure that we are getting water on the fire when that opening is created.
Communication. Guys, you got to talk to each other, because coordinating.
All right, we're coming up on the witching hour. So, Brian, why don't you kick off our closing remarks?
Well, I just try to, encourage all firemen, young firemen coming on. And I'm big on size-up indicators, through the windshield, on approach, before you even leave the firehouse, knowing your crew, the neighborhood you're working in, knowing the type of construction. Maybe you've been there before for an EMS call or careless cooking or whatever. Knowing those layouts of those houses and identifying as much as you can from the street before you even get out takes away. You're taking so much before you even get off the truck. It does help. And fighting a basement attic fire, we fight a boatload of basement fires. And I'm telling you, they're pretty safe. You're fighting it from the bottom of the stairs. Sometimes you'll watch the joists. They'll just drop down like little toothpicks. I mean, you have a safe spot where you're at on the interior stairs. It's very rare you take a line and go all the way up right off the bat. You're usually knocking the fire down, and then you're moving up, and then you're moving up. And just remember, when you see window units, air conditioner units, this and a fire escape, lights on, curtains, all that shit, take that shit in, because somebody's probably sleeping up there. So even if you have a second-floor fire, don't ignore the fact that if you don't put a 35 up and get somebody out of that attic, I know where I work, there's kids who sleep in the attic. There's tons of people who sleep in the attic. So to me, it's always a life hazard. It's always one of those. It's a sleeping area to me all the time until proven otherwise.
Until proven otherwise.
Exactly. All right, Lee, what are your closing thoughts for the show?
Like I said, you really have to have a great appreciation for building construction. So when you pull up and you see what you have, you know this is going to go. You know how this game is going to get played. You know what resources have to go where. You know what could go wrong, what could go right. You have to understand building construction. There's no other way around it. To understand building construction is to understand the recipe of the fire. It's as simple as that.
All right, Dave.
I have to echo with what Lee's saying. We're losing sight of this building construction component in the fire service. And when I teach classes, I plead to the people out there, I say, go get the fourth edition of Brannigan's book and read it. It's a good read. It's easy for firefighters to understand. That fourth edition was actually written for the average firefighter to understand the building construction. 360s, if you can get them. Get a look at what's going on when you're approaching the scene. Take a look at what the building's doing. You know, where do you have your smoke coming from? If you have smoke coming from the east, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a fire in the attic. It just means that smoke has gotten up into that area. You got to check the basement. You got to rule it out. That's for anything, whether you're running a house fire, garden apartment, high rise, row house, it doesn't matter. Attic fires, be prepared for all those dead loads that are up there. You got to work, the engine and truck company have to work together, get the ceilings dropped, get a line in place. And ventilate. If you think the roof, as an incident commander, if you feel that roof needs to be open, or if you're an engine company and you're inside and you're taking a beating, if you think that roof needs to be open, radio it back out. Tell them you need that roof opened up right away. get a truck crew up there, get that roof opened up. I think that we've gotten into this point where people are afraid because they've been pounded about in the head about these truss constructions that if the moment you step on a roof, it's going to collapse and you're going to fall through. It's just not true.
Amen.
Get your visual clues, find out what's going on, size up that roof. If you don't know how to size up a roof, you shouldn't be riding a truck company anyway. So you got to get that experience underneath you. Once you figure that out, get your saws up there, get the roof opened up. Once you got the hole done, get down, let command know it's done. Guys that are working below are going to appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. All right, and I don't want to belabor any of that because you guys pretty much hit on their really critical points and really highlight the conversation from tonight. So you touched on Brannigan's book. I also wanted to highlight Vinnie Dunn's books as well, you know, Collapse of a Burning Building, and then he just published a new book as well, Firefighter's Battle Space, and it's all on building construction and the different styles of occupancies and how that construction plays into our operations as well. It's a great read, and a large portion of the money goes to charity as well. So it's a win-win. So I just wanted to take a moment to thank both of our guests, Lee Shapiro from Hartford and Brian Butler from Trenton, for joining us today and providing us and our listeners with some excellent content tonight. So thank you both for joining us. All right,
thank
and
you.
That concludes the show for tonight. So thank you to our listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you in another 6 weeks. Take care, everyone, and stay safe.